The Ulster Unionist Party's health spokesperson Roy Beggs has described the latest provisional figures on accident and emergency waiting times as truly shocking. Last year, the health minister said he wanted to see 95% of patients in A&E departments admitted or discharged within 4 hours. Well, Roy Beggs joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just give us an idea of these figures. How different are they from the minister's targets?
Well, the target of the United Kingdom is that 95% of patients should be treated within 4 hours at an A&E unit. And at present, about a third of everyone who goes to an A&E are not treated within that time within Northern Ireland. It is considerably worse performers than is happening in other parts of the United Kingdom. They are struggling elsewhere as well, but we are definitely at the poorer end of things. And what is of even more concern to me is that when you analyse the figures, certainly over the last number of years, look at the last 2 years the ministers came to office, our figures have been consistently deteriorating and there's been a poorer service.
Well, the minister has established this action group that is made up of members of the Health and Social Care Board, the Public Health Agency. Is he not trying here to address the issue?
I'm sure he's trying, but what we want is results. I remember being quite surprised last autumn when officials came to the Health Committee and we were told that there had been an improvement over this last number of months. But when I did my own analysis of it, I discovered that annually there is a deterioration each winter, and they were not comparing like with like. They were trying to put a gloss on it. And when you look at the annual figures, and when you look particularly at the figures of the last 2 months have shown that a number of our A&E units are really not providing the service that is needed. And I'm also picking up stories from constituents, stories such as three ambulance crews being inside an A&E unit who cannot leave their patient, something that's quite critical, and there are no receiving medics at the A&E unit to treat them. That, of course, does mean that there are less ambulances out there to respond to another emergency.
Well, let's just give people an idea, Roy Beggs, of these figures. The minister's target is 95% of people should be seen and discharged or admitted within 4 hours. The Mater is sitting at 67.9. The Royal Victoria Hospital is sitting at 59.4. Antrim Area, 62.8. The Ulster, 61.3. So that does, of course, being provisional figures, does fall short of the minister's four-hour target. But that target dates back to Michael McGimsey's time as minister. He was your party colleague.
Sorry, the target is the right target. The target, I mean, 95% of people should be seen within those 4 hours period, and the performance rates were much better previously. But let's look at what the current minister is doing. He is accountable. He has been in position for the last 2 years, and the figures have been deteriorating.
Well, why do you think this four-hour target isn't being met?
I have no doubt there are a range of figures, a range of reasons for this. One issue that I've came across myself that I've mentioned earlier is being referred to doctor on call to get boot stitches out and being told, sorry, we can't do that. And then they send me to A&E. We need to give more responsibility and more options to patients so not everyone has to go to A&E, that it is just the most serious. And we must empower our GPs and their surgeries and our out-of-hour service to treat more and more less serious instances so that not everyone is simply sent to accident emergency in order that others can say, yes, I have no cues here and everything's hunky-dory.
But does that not put the onus on the public, Roy Beggs, as well? That aren't there too many cases where people are turning up at A&Es when they should be going elsewhere?
But that is the issue. What is the option for individuals? I chose not to go to an A&E. I went to an out-of-hour service. I made them aware of what in my own personal case, what the issue was. They knew what was coming. I went in. I had my consultation, and then they sent me to A&E. We need to provide options for the public. And if the public has options, they will start to take them up because they are aware of the horrendous waiting times. I mean, it's not right when you hear of an ambulance crew calling to respond to an emergency, and then advising the wife of a constituent of mine that, sorry, we don't think we should send you to the accident emergency because there's just 9 hours waiting time there at present. We'll try and contact your GP and we'll wait here until your GP gets out. I mean, the service is getting critical and we need to improve it.
These are all great ideas, but surely they cost money and there isn't a lot of that around at the moment.
I'll take you back to a number of years ago when the current budget was set. What was said by the DUP, who've assumed this position as health minister, and of course they control the position of finance, they said that they didn't need more money. They said that you could do things better by just simply reorganising. I have no doubt that a certain amount of change is right, but in making that change, money is required so that services do not drop as new services are introduced. It's okay to bring about change when you have provided something which is better.
Well, Garrett Martin, the Deputy Director of the Royal College of Nursing, also joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa.
Well, what's your response to these figures?
Well, we absolutely, and we are on record on many occasions to saying that this is totally unacceptable. The waiting time for patients and Northern Ireland is the worst in the United Kingdom in terms of waiting times. They're totally unacceptable.
Well, I think you'll both be interested. We've just had a statement in from the Department of Health, and they say that the minister has made clear excessive waiting times in emergency departments are unacceptable. Improvement is needed so that patients can have confidence when they attend an emergency department that they will be assessed and treated within an acceptable period of time. Since the Emergency Department Improvement Action Group was established in April, there has been some improvement in performance. However, the latest figures are a clear indication that emergency departments in Northern Ireland continue to face significant pressures and that more needs to be done to address this issue and eliminate excessive waits in all emergency departments in Northern Ireland. Garrett Martin, is that your experience at the coalface?
Well, the experience of our members, and we recently met our members and representatives from almost all the emergency departments in Northern Ireland, and the problems are universal. We've heard the rhetoric, we've heard the improvement plans, we've seen some, and there has been some good work, and I think it's important that we acknowledge that, and our members certainly acknowledge that. But it's sustainable change. It's change, it's investment in the things that work well, it's investments in the things that actually work, and what we're seeing is that isn't happening. And we have things that, in terms of the emergency care, it is not just about more resources in the emergency department. And I briefly caught your last speaker and absolutely would agree. It's about putting the services into where patients need them. We've seen reductions in community nursing services, for example. That has a negative impact in terms of waiting times in A&E. We've seen some of the problems with social care and funding for social care. Mental health resources need to be resourced. This isn't an emergency care department issue. It's a whole system issue. Of course, it's complex. It's something that, if it was easily done, it would have been corrected a long time ago. But it is a barometer. The emergency department waiting times are a barometer on how the service as a whole is working. And it's obviously not working.
Well, if it isn't working, what sort of pressure is that putting your members under?
It's immense pressure. Our members are very, very distressed, and certainly at the meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago with our members, they were very, very clear that they are very passionate about the work they do. They work incredibly hard. They're reporting that they are not getting their breaks. They're working over the hours that they're meant to be working. They are absolutely explaining risks in the system that are totally unacceptable, and they're fearful. They believe they're unable to do the job that they want to in terms of caring for patients in a dignified and safe manner. And patients deserve better. Patients deserve better. And we need services that are fit for patients in terms of the right place at the right time, and to avoid patients having to come to A&E in the first place, and to avoid all the backlogs in terms of patients who do need to come into hospital and need to be admitted, that they are not delayed from getting to the right hospital bed.
John's in Dunamana. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm grand. My point is, dear, the health service in Northern Ireland is struggling big time. And instead of the Stormont government wasting money on nonsensical things like shared futures and study of cultures and all this nonsense and money that is wasted hand over fist, and all should be redirected to the health service. The health service should get as much help as they can get. Bring back prescription charges for them that can afford it. And more support given to the health service and all those that work on it.
What's your experience, John, of the health service over the last few years?
My experience of the health service has been very, very good. I'm under terrific pressure and terrific strain. I was in casualty one night, I had a problem with my left eye, and sort of in hours. And people were coming in drunk. I don't know what substances that they were on, going clean off their head, shouting, roaring abuse at staff, doctors, ordinary support services. And they just took it all and just had it muddled through. I found my experience in health service very, very good. I find if you work with them, they'll work with you.
Garrett Martin, John there describes a scene that is probably fairly common in most A&Es.
That's correct. That's right. And certainly our members report that, they understand that relatives and patients get frustrated because the waiting times are so unacceptable. Obviously, aggression and violence against staff is totally unacceptable. But once again, it's about getting services that are appropriate to patients' needs. And unfortunately, that isn't happening at this moment in time.
Do you think the Transforming Your Care reform package will help? It's likely to reduce the number of A&E departments.
Well, it's only going to help if it is properly resourced and if the transfer to community services is actually backed up with the resources required to deliver on that. And what we're not seeing that at the moment. We're seeing reductions in, as I said earlier, community nursing services, which are central in terms of keeping, for example, older people out of hospital. The role of specialist nurses, as another example, in terms of keeping people out of hospital, is key to a lot of this. I've mentioned domiciliary care and social care. All those things are key. Mental health service, key to keeping patients from having to come to A&E, because A&E is patients' last resort. And if the GP out of our services and the other services in the community aren't responsive enough and flexible enough to patient need, then patients have no option and no choice but to end up in the A&E department. And that's very, very frustrating. It's very frustrating for staff. And that's something that will be key in terms of trying to turn around this totally and utterly unacceptable situation. I think the frustration, Lisa, is how many times have we been on this show talking about this? You know, the change, any change has to be sustainable. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing little bits and pieces. And, you know, to be honest, you know, oh yes, we've seen an improvement over this month. But an improvement over a month may well be seasonal, may well be, you know, not necessarily explained by a change that has been made. And we have to make sure that the change is the right change and not at the cost or expense of another part in the system as well. So there's lots to be done, and certainly the RCN will play its part to try and do this. But it is very, very frustrating that month on month we're talking about the same issue here.
Has this task force helped that the Minister set up to look at the A&E problems?
Well, I think there have been certain things attempted and done that our members report that are positive. However, we don't see the sustainable results or sustainable improvements. And, you know, it certainly is questionable whether what has been put in place in terms of, you know, for example, one of the things that is happening is patients, in order to move patients out of A&E, extra beds are being created on wards. That's really just transferring the problem to another area. And wards are under pressure. You know, to put another couple of extra beds in a ward is not fundamentally treating the cause. It may well relieve the symptom for a while, but it doesn't treat the cause. You know, so we need real sustainable change in all the different aspects of the service that impact on this. And the whole system has to work together on this. And as I say, you know, small improvements, short term, ones that work, we have to keep doing and we have to invest in. But unfortunately, we're not seeing that at the moment.
Well, the statement from the Department of Health, it goes on to say that it was because of the minister's continuing concerns about the lack of sufficient improvement in emergency department waiting times at the Northern Trust that a senior director of turnaround was appointed to that trust on the 13th of May to lead the work to improve performance in critical areas of service delivery. This is part of a programme of intensive support being provided to the Trust to ensure it meets the needs of its population. The Department expects these changes to impact positively on waiting times at the Trust's emergency departments. And in addition, the Department has invested $15 million in a new 24-bed ward at the Antrim Hospital, which is due to open later this month, and a new emergency department, which will be operational from June and will cater for up to 90,000 attendances a year. The Minister will look to the Health and Social Care Board to ensure the Trust's work to meet the waiting time standards which have been set for the emergency departments. Garrett Martin, if the Minister's listening this morning, what's your message to him?
I think all those things are positive. We're meeting the Minister next week to discuss a number of these issues, but certainly our message to the Minister is that we want to work constructively with him, but we know that the focus here is not just on the acute hospital. We need the focus to be on the community services. We need the infrastructure there to be able to support this so that patients are treated in the right place by the right people in order for them to have to avoid actually coming to the emergency department whenever they have no other option left to them.
Let's hear from Bertie in Lisburn. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. Yes, so just this time last year, I took seriously ill at home, and the doctor came and he said, right, you're for the Royal. I've perforated appendicitis, and at my age, like I'm a senior citizen, and they rushed me into the Royal, and I was operated on right away. And I couldn't speak high enough for the attention I got in the Royal. I was very, very ill, so I was. I thought I wasn't going to make it, but however, I made it. And but the attention I got from the doctors and nurse and all this stuff, and the place was bunged with people. But no matter about that, I got first class attention, and I couldn't speak high enough of the Royal. And the staff of it are very, very good to me. So they were. I must have been in about near 10 days before I got home, but thankfully I'm home, keeping not so bad now at all. But only for the prompt attention and the Royal, I think I wouldn't have been here today to be on the telephone with you.
Well, it's good to hear, Bertie, that you're doing better anyway.
Indeed, yes, I'm feeling really good, Lisa, and thanks to all the doctors, Dr. Keith Gardner in the Royal, and it was outstanding, so he's along with all the other doctors and staff, so I couldn't speak high enough of him. I'm sorry they're so short of money, but there was a previous caller on there, John, saying, yes, I wouldn't mind if they brought back prescription charges, and there's other things. They're putting up new buildings with this, that, and the other, and a lot of stuff wasn't spent, and I think they should go back, and any available money at all that should be put into the hospital service, all the hospitals. For it's lagging badly behind. And the minister can only do so much. We know his hands is tied with the amount of money that there's so many wanting a slice of the cake. And but I would like to see the hospital getting priority and a bigger slice of the cake.
Okay, Bertie. Well, Roy Beggs, you heard both Bertie and John, our earlier caller, say that it's a good idea to bring back prescription charges. Is that something you would support?
Well, I would support providing additional resources to our health service. At present, there is capital funding that is available, and I would suggest that there are health projects which can bring long-term benefits and long-term savings if they were to go ahead. So I would hope that some of the new health and care centres will ultimately get some funding from that. Now, with regarding prescription charges, I would say that many people, perhaps most people, would not have any adverse effect if they had to pay prescription charges. But the difficulty is some of the most vulnerable, some of the most perhaps disabled because of their illness in society are on very low incomes. And the question that has to be asked is what would be the adverse effect on them if prescription charges were introduced? And until that issue is addressed, I think there are huge dangers because not only do people have to choose sometimes between food and heat, but we may introduce once again a further choice between food, heat and prescription, but the medication that is essential for them.
Conor McCarthy is chairperson of Unison at the Royal. Good morning, Conor.
Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
Are you surprised at these figures?
No, I'm not surprised at all. But I mean, at the same time, in regards to the NE services, I mean, what you have to understand is, in the Royal, for example, it's a bit of a unique situation. It's not the volume of people coming through the area certainly has increased, but it hasn't increased to the extent where it's completely unmanageable to a certain degree. What's the problem in the Royal is that the environment that they're coming into is a temporary location. In other words, it's more or less a porter cabin until the new NE opens. We're all hoping that when the new NE opens, it's properly resourced and it also alleviates some of the pressures that exist there at the minute. In relation to the reason why people are coming to NEs across the north is basically that they feel they've nowhere alternative because the primary care situation has not been fixed or it's inadequate at the minute. I mean, transforming your care has an awful lot of proposals on how to resolve this, and I mean, no one's going to dispute some of those proposals are very good in the sense and listen to out of hours, opening the GPs, extended hours, so on, and more being done within the community. Now, it says all that, but what it doesn't tell you is how it's going to do it. It doesn't tell you that how it's going to resource it. It doesn't tell you the impact. It's going to stop the current cuts that are currently happening within the community sector to take on board what they're planning to do, moving beds out of the acute into the community setting to be cared for, people to be cared for in their own homes. What my members see in the Royal, and particularly across probably most of the trade union movement, is that we feel that the Transforming Your Care proposals are laying the ground, and the Health and Social Care Board are complicit in this through widespread privatisation of community services, and if there need be, widespread privatisation of certain services within the acute setting. I mean, as I say, we feel, from a Unison point of view in the Royal, that the Belfast Trust has proposed that does look at social enterprises and so on within the community, and everyone's concerned about that because we do see the road here, we see the road ahead, we see England, and we only have to look at England and we see the foundation hospitals, we see Virgin Healthcare, we see all these care providers lining up to step in and try and provide services for profit and rather than patient need, and that's concerning.
Well, do you think that there needs to be a real sea change in how we think as the public, you know, turning up at A&E for injuries or illnesses that could be treated by an out-of-hours doctor?
Well, as I say, I've never ever met a person who attended A&E just for the sake of coming to A&E. The vast majority of people attend A&E.
Oh, you must have, Conor. I've been in A&E and I've seen people who were either drunk and shouldn't have been there, or you know, or very, very minor injuries.
Well, I say the power still remains within the services and those who attend A&Es and those who are working in A&Es at a management level and a senior condition level to say to those people that you shouldn't be here, you don't need to be here, and therefore you're not being treated. I mean, that power's there. I mean, the minister endorsed that over the last few years, and with people, what he called abusing the NE situation. And as I say, Lisa, I just don't buy that. I don't buy that people weigh in the NE and they shouldn't be there, and that gives a perception out there in the public. I mean, the real failure here, and to be perfectly honest with you, the real failure is our politicians. Our politicians are completely inept to deal with this situation in regards to our health needs. We do see the Health and Social Care Board as one of the guardians of the health service and one of the protectors of the health service, and it's doing nothing but destroying it from the inside, and it needs to step up to the plate. It needs to have better funding. It needs to look at, get on the ground, speak to staff, try and take staff's ideas on boards, and also, as I say, the primary care, all the focus should be on the primary care scenario to see how primary care can be improved. So therefore, people who are in an acute setting are ill.
Okay, so to sum up, these latest figures for A&E waiting times aren't getting any better. The Health Minister, Edmund Poots, has told this programme in a statement, since the Emergency Department Improvement Action Group was established, there has been some improvement. However, the latest figures are a clear indication that the emergency departments do face significant pressures.